Thanks for tuning in to Does Not Compute. Remember to check out the rest of the shows on the Spec Network by heading over to spec.fm. There's a ton of great content there to help you learn more about things like design, development, and even running your own business. You can also join the Spec Slack by visiting spec.fm/slack. Sean and I would love to talk to you there. I feel like I'm in a fog today, Sean.
Same. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's had a very unfruitful Destiny session.
As in you didn't play well?
I played fine. It's just that I got screwed by the RNG for weeks now. Actually, months. There's one thing that I want. I can't get it. My brother's got two right in front of me. My nephew got two and scrapped one of them right in front of me. Like, he made sure I was listening. It came through the speaker, Paul. So I'm fired up about that.
Yeah. Those random numbers will get you.
Yeah, it just feels like one of those days. Sunday, I know that the next week's going to be busy for me. Doing a second beta test, like a closed beta, at the end of next week, or this coming weekend, rather. And there are a couple of large features that I am going to try to get done. So I just know that it's going to be a tough one. And I think that my body is telling me to rest today while I can.
Yeah, I've kind of been the same this weekend. I don't know if next week is a big week, but I feel like there's a lot of loose ends that need wrapping up, so I'm probably going to be kind of all over the place next week. So it's just kind of one of those things where I'm trying to mentally prepare for that a little bit.
Yeah, it's like your body is like, you need to rest up now or else. You know what's going to happen, you know, before like the sick phase kicks in. Like, your body's like, all right, if you're not going to rest, I'm going to make you rest.
Yep. So you've been talking to me a lot this week about refactoring. You're doing like a fair bit of refactoring, it sounds like, at the moment.
A fair bit. Yeah. That's fair to say that. Quite a bit, a large amount of refactoring. But what makes it even more fun is it's like a mixture of refactoring and adding. So
I always get really nervous when I have to do that, when I have to refactor kind of while I add something.
Right. Like a new feature requires you to change another feature.
Right. And I mean, you try to avoid it. You try to break things up as much as you can. But sometimes there are just things that overlap.
Yeah, there's always things that overlap. And there's always edge cases you haven't considered. There's situations you haven't considered. It's just part of life. You know, I've accepted it as part of being a programmer. That's just something that I have to deal with. So it's been interesting. You know, I've been learning a lot. Because obviously, you know, I've made apps before, but this is like the first one where I'm going to be taking it like post launch, and I'm thinking about it post MVP, which is different for me. And I'm really trying to take my time. You know, I'm trying to not rush. Like, I say that a lot, that when I rush, I make mistakes, and I'm trying to not do that. It's difficult, you know, especially when people are talking about different deadlines for launching and, you know, things like that. And so you kind of feel like this pressure to push yourself harder than you probably should. And that compounds with refactoring, you know, because then you're like, crap, I need to change this quickly. I just need to get it done. And so then you start to cut corners, which is not good, especially if you have an existing code base and you're making changes.
Well, at some point, it's like you're refactoring, but you're also leaving another thing that's going to have to be refactored in a couple of weeks anyhow.
Right. You just end up with a bunch of methods to say to do, fix this, or to do, don't do this maybe, or something like that. I know there's a couple that I did last week that were, you know, to do, maybe change this, but
yeah, to do, I know this isn't optimal.
Yeah. And if you've ever inherited a project that has those in it, I'm on the other side of the coin now. So,
I mean, I think every programmer at various points in their career is on both sides of that.
Yeah. Again, it's just part of being a programmer, but so I've been learning a lot. I'm learning things, you know, good things, bad things, things to definitely not do, things that should be done. I guess like best practices for refactoring. And I've read blog posts and heard people talk about it, but I'm getting firsthand knowledge.
So what are some of the things that you've picked up there that have been useful?
So there's like, I think there's two things that are most important. So number one is don't change things unless you absolutely have to. Because one thing that I'll do is I'll start changing stuff. Like, I'll start making additions or changes to a feature. And then out of the corner of my eye, I'll notice something else. I'm like, I should fix that too. When it's not necessarily directly related, that's a bad idea. Because what happens is you start spreading your base too thin, and then you can't remember everything. Like, you have to keep everything in context. And when you start expanding the surface area of the problem you're trying to solve, it gets difficult.
Yeah, that's something that I've struggled with a lot. These days, what I've kind of taken to doing, for at least for quick fixes, where it's like, oh, I just want to swap these three lines around and make some little changes there. I'll actually just stop what I'm doing and do that really quickly and then commit that separately, which one thing that I really like about Tower is that it makes committing just single parts or even individual lines of a file just dead easy. So I can pop over there without really losing my flow and in 30 seconds have made that change and committed it, and it's just fixed and better. And then I can go on with the thing that I was already working on and still have a clean commit for that.
Yeah, that's what I've been doing too. A lot of times what I'll do is I'll just stash what I'm doing and commit it quickly. I'll hop over to another branch or something like that. And it works out really, really well. And like you said, I don't have to, especially with Tower, I don't have to fiddle around like, how do I do this again? If it's something I don't have to do necessarily too often, I won't have the commands memorized. But with Tower, I don't have to do that. I just, you know, click on a file and it shows me the diff. And I can just add or subtract there.
And then you can actually just click on each line that you want to commit. And it's just really awesome. So simple.
Yeah. But that's one thing I noticed myself doing is kind of spreading out the surface area. And one way that I notice I'm doing it is actually when I look at Tower and I start to see more files and I start to recognize files that aren't directly related. And I was like, oh crap, I did change that. And so then I either I'll stop what I'm doing and I'll split up and then split up the commits, you know, and I'll commit things as they should be. But that's one telltale sign is when my change log or my get status is getting longer, I know that I'm doing that and I shouldn't. But that's probably my biggest downfall is, you know, getting distracted by other things that I see. It's kind of like you're on your way to the kitchen to clean a dish, but then you notice a mess in the living room. And so then you put the dish down and then forget you put the dish down, you know? I think that's what happens to me a lot. And I guess the second most important thing that has just been learning and relearning and relearning is that how important tests can be. And so what I'll do is the app that I'm working on, Design Collective, they're, you know, like 50, 60 tests, which isn't a whole lot, but it covers some of the important things. And so what I'll do is before I make a change, I will make sure that I write, if the tests aren't there for it, I will write tests first to make sure what happens right now is correct. So that way I can verify I don't break things when I start changing stuff. And it might sound like an extra step, but to me, it's necessary. I'm sure there's other, you know, better devs out there that might be able to handle it better. But for me, it's just important that I write those. I verify the current implementation. And then what I'll do is I'll write a few more tests for what's going to happen. You know, so I'll try to use TDD or whatever. I don't stick to it red, green, refactor all the time because I just start jumping ahead. But I find that things that I've introduced, bugs that I've introduced into the system, I'll catch them almost every time, you know, if I'm writing tests first. So I think those are my two big things that I've learned in the past week is write my tests, just do it, you know? And it's kind of like going to the gym, just do it. And then also making sure I'm not spreading out my problem surface area by getting distracted.
Yeah, with the test thing, you really do just have to sit down and force yourself to do them. And that's something that I struggled with a lot as a more junior developer. Partly because of the job situations I was in during that period just didn't really allow as much time for things like testing, just because of the nature of those companies and how they were set up. But also because I don't know, it's really easy to say, well, I can just be more productive and write more features instead or do bug fixes. And why am I wasting my time doing these tests? But man, they are so, so critical. NestNotes isn't fully tested either, but it has like a decent set of tests for things that could pretty easily go wrong, I would say. And that saved me like 3 times in the past week alone from just making a dumb mistake on my end.
Yeah. I mean, if anything, it's catching stuff that you don't notice the first time. Typos, spelling mistakes, even just down to like, oh, I didn't implement this feature quite right. You know, there's a small thing. And a lot of times what happens is I'll have specs for what I need. It's not like specs in the sense of like, this is how this thing should be implemented, not necessarily spec tests for them. But a lot of times I'll have the requirements and I'll build something out. But in the middle of building it, I forget about one of the requirements. And so then the implementation deviates from what it should be. And you can fix that just by writing tests down. Like you write your tests, you don't have to make them all pass, obviously, up front. Just what I do actually is if I have to end up making a new spec or like a new spec file or something like that, I'm using RSpec. I'll write a bunch of pending tests before I even start trying to make any of them pass. So I'll think of everything that could possibly go wrong or everything that needs to be done. All right, it does this, it does this, it doesn't do this. Or in the context of this, it does this and not this. And so I'll write them down and that way I'll have like 10 pending tests and I'll just make them pass one by one.
So very TDD.
Yeah. I mean, it just works for me. So I noticed that in the past, if I try to like write the first test, make it pass, write the second test, I start to forget edge cases that I might've thought about previously because I've been working.
Oh, so you're saying that like writing out the whole suite before you start an implementation is working out better for you?
Oh yeah, definitely. So I don't necessarily like, I don't go to like my integration tests and write those and then my unit tests and write those. If I'm working on a model, I'll unit test it then. So what I'll do is just kind of break it up into chunks. And if I'm working on a model, I will write a bunch of pending tests for the unit tests. Or if I'm working in a controller, I'll go into that spec file and write a bunch of pending tests for that. And at the very least, if I don't have time to finish all of them or something like that, if I go back to it, I have it there. You know, I'll just run my test suite and then I know what's pending and what needs to be done.
Right. You can't forget because you're going to see those little marks every single time you run your tests.
Exactly. Exactly. In a person like me, I see those and I'm like, I got to get rid of them. It has to be all the dots. They have to be, it has to match. You know what I mean? So that's been working out really well for me. And I find it's less scary to approach it that way because I'm almost like writing the documentation for the spec, for the feature up front. And it's less intimidating because I don't have to go through and make them pass all at once. If I'm not exactly sure how to test something, at the very least, I'll just write pending tests for that. And then that way I have it there. I know what I need to do. And then I can ask somebody, hey, how would you approach this? But at least it's there and documented.
Right. Or I mean, if you really need to launch something for whatever reason, like there are deadlines. This is the real world. So sometimes you can't write a test. But if you have that pending thing there, then when you do have time, you will be able to find the thing. And I think that's really important because it's so easy to say like, oh, you know what? I need to do these couple tests. Let me put in a GitHub issue for that or whatever. Just put it right there. Make it pending.
Yeah, it's been working great for me. So that way I can switch to my different feature. So I do feature branches for everything. GitHub issue number - issue name or something. And so as I'm switching through branches and working on features, all my pending tests are there. So I'm using Guard, which is pretty awesome for Rails if you haven't used it. It basically just auto runs my tests for me. So like if I'm in a model, it'll run that unit test, or if I'm in a controller, it'll run that controller's test. It's context aware. Even so, I'm starting to test some of the reg tasks too, because those are pretty important for the business logic, and it'll just run like my reg specs too, which is kind of cool.
That's awesome. Yeah, are you using RSpec?
Yes, I'm using RSpec. So an interesting thing actually is that I recently resubscribed to Upcase. And so I'm trying to put myself back into school where I schedule time. This is my study time and this is my assignment time because Upcase has assignments. And like my sister's going back to school to get her nursing degree and, you know, Jamie's in school. So I feel like if other people around me are doing it, I can do it too. And so that's what I'm doing. But this morning I was walking through some more testing stuff and I know you like mini tests because there's not as much magic. It's just Ruby. You know, you're just writing methods and your tests are essentially just a bunch of methods that you write, right? And so actually they encourage people to not use a lot of the magic that comes with RSpec. And they're like, don't use lots of befores and stuff like that. Just write methods. Just write plain old Ruby and use those in your tests and you'll be a happier person. So I think I'm using RSpec more like I would mini test.
Sure. Yeah, that makes sense. I do actually use, I can't remember the name of it offhand. It's called mini test spec or something. So I get to use kind of the similar syntax for describing things, which is pretty cool. Right now I'm using fixtures though, which, man, I always really want to like fixtures because DHH is all about fixtures. I try to go with what DHH likes. But I'm probably going to be switching those out for factories here pretty soon.
You know, I haven't actually used fixtures beyond maybe just a couple of tests. I've always just used factory rule because that's what, when I Google about Rails testing, it's just a thing. It's just, is what it
right,
is
right.
What people are using. And I've been really happy with it so far. It's been great. And they even provide like linting. I'm sure you could do this with fixtures too, but I have a rake task that lints my factories to make sure, like if I'm making migrations to the database, that all my factories are up to date. And obviously your tests will start failing if they're not, but
that's really cool. I like that.
Yeah. It saves me a lot of time. And that way I'm trying to get into a habit, like the TDD cycle. Like if I make a migration, the second thing I do is I go and change the factory for it.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I definitely need to make that switch because it's just every new Rails project, I'm like, maybe this is the one where I'll finally use fixtures. And then I try them for a little bit and things get messy quickly. And I just, factories are pretty nice.
So what's the big, like, I don't really know much about fixtures, honestly. I mean, besides like reading about DHAs, talking about them, and the Rails guides, you know, obviously mentions them too. What's the biggest pain point with that that a factory would solve?
Well, one of them for me that I kind of wasn't expecting for this app is, well, fixtures don't actually run like before create callbacks, which is, I guess, to just make the test faster.
Sure.
But factories do run those. And a lot of logic for my models happens in like before create callbacks and that sort of thing for generating tokens for password resets and auth and all that kind of stuff.
Sure.
And so that's kind of just a pain. And they're just so static. They're just not very pleasant, and I guess they don't feel very Ruby-ish to work with.
I see that makes sense. That makes sense. I've been using the Faker gem with factories, and it's been great because, you know, every instance of the factory is completely randomized, which is nice, and it sometimes helps me catch things. But I don't know. It's been working well for me. So on the Watch Nature stuff I'm working on, like yesterday, I went to Starbucks and I implemented a good portion of the API, and I TD'd the whole thing, and it felt good, and it just worked out fine. So what's kind of cool is that I'm able to work on Design Collective, where I inherited a code base and I'm refactoring and making additions at the same time as I'm working on Watch Nature, where it's a completely new code base. And what's cool is that I'm learning things on both sides and applying them to one or the other.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. So kind of on the whole fixtures versus factories, mini test, RSpec note, that's actually something that I wanted to talk about a little bit today, is how important it is to go back and reevaluate your tools. I think that something that we talk about on the show a lot is, you know, making sure that you know the tools that you do use and that you don't always need to be looking at the next new thing. But kind of what we haven't talked about so much is that it can also be very, very important to go back and reevaluate things that you've maybe passed on in the past. Maybe a tool just wasn't a good fit for either your brain or the project you were working on at the time. That doesn't mean that it will always not be a good fit. I think a great example of this is on Nest Notes, I'm using Webpack, which is something that I've kind of tried to avoid in the past, just because there is kind of a pretty high barrier to entry there. But now, because of both changes in how I think about writing JavaScript and the way I'm approaching writing Nest Notes, it's actually a super great fit, Webpack. And that's been something that has been one of the main components of the API client. And I think it's kind of the same with like fixtures and with factories, where I want to keep reevaluating things when I have that ability. It's not always the right time. It's not always the right time to reevaluate your tool choices. But when you can make that time, I think it is really important and super useful as a thing to help you kind of continue growing as a developer. That's just been something I've been thinking about a lot lately.
No, that's a really great point that you make. Knowing when to look around for an update and knowing when to stick with what you know. It's hard because I feel like a lot of people get excited, or me, you know, I'll read a blog post about something and I'll get excited and be like, oh, this sounds great. And I'll use it and it's not quite ready for prime time, you know, or it doesn't quite fit my use case or something. And then I just feel like I'm trying to shoehorn something in and I'm not productive, I'm frustrated and all that. So it's kind of hard to know when it's time to look around, you know. So what kind of prompted you to actually look at Webpack after? Because I know you've like obviously been around it. I talked about it a little bit. You've, you know, heard people talking about it. But what was like, what caused you to be like, maybe I should give this another shot?
So I was originally building out Nest Notes with just as a Rails app with a Vue component in it. And then I was like, you know what, this is not going to be the way to do this. I'm going to regret doing this if I continue down this road. So I just made the call and I was like, okay, you know what? I'm going to separate this out, API with admin interface and then just a consumer. And that's everything. I want it to be completely separate, two separate repos, just entirely broken out. And I was looking into it. In the past, I've used a lot of Browserify for things and I was trying to get something working with that. And I had it up and running, but it just kind of wasn't exactly what I was looking for. There were some problems with the flow, basically, and it just wasn't ideal. And so I just did some research, and people kept recommending Webpack. I hadn't had a ton of luck with it in the past, But what I did was, I think we actually talked about this in an episode a while back. What I did was I ended up just going through the Webpack basic tutorial just so I kind of understood the concepts and building up on that so that I had like a foundational understanding of it. And then instead of going with like the Vue bundle where it has all the stuff that you need to run Vue with Webpack nicely, I just built it out one by one. I'm like, okay, now I need to figure out CSS, and I would just read up on that and implement that. And it just worked out really nicely doing it that way for me, where I actually learned it from the bottom up instead of taking a pre-built thing and trying to dissect it from the top down.
How you put that just now is actually really good. I think really, it does a really good job at explaining the difference or what makes it easier to learn something as big and as complicated as Webpack. Because there are a lot of blog posts, and I think I even screwed up and I said, hey, just try this thing. instead of encouraging you to go through the tutorial. But there are a lot of resources out there that kind of do the top-down approach, which is very difficult to learn from. It's super hard to learn from that because it's like blasting you with everything up front. Whereas, like you said, you kind of learned it as you needed it.
Right. That's just not how my brain works, I guess. It's so much easier for me to say, okay, I have this set up to do these three things. Now I need to add this fourth thing. How do I add the fourth thing? Rather than saying I have this config that does 20 things, I think maybe, or maybe it does more than that, but I need to change one of those and I don't even know which parts of this 200 line config file affect that one thing I need to change. And so you're really just shooting in the dark when you don't fully get how Webpack works. I think that's a pretty big deal, is not just for Webpack, but especially for Webpack, is that learning from the ground up, learning the most basic thing and just adding on to that as you need it. Like my Webpack build initially didn't even have CSS, and now it has hot loading CSS with variables and all sorts of junk. Like it's really cool now, but I didn't start out with that. I just added it as I needed those features.
Right.
So, I mean, I guess all that to say, I think it is really important to kind of make sure that you're keeping up to date with your tools, making sure that the things you're using, you know them really well, but also reevaluating from time to time whether they are actually working for you. And maybe sometimes making a decision to change based on that. Thanks for listening to this episode of Does Not Compute. If you enjoy the show, please remember to give us a rating or review in iTunes. It just takes a minute and is one of the most effective ways to help spread the word about Does Not Compute.